5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hi guys, it's your girl Madison here. Each week we're showcasing a SJM licensed business, and this week we have a great one for you. Celestial Fairy Trove has everything you need to be comfy while you read. They have the cutest Kindle cases and blankets. I am a Throne of Glass girly at heart, and I am obsessed with their Aelin and Rowan Kindle case. Brooke from Celestial Fairy Trove would like to send a special message to our listeners that she is so thankful for the community in this uncertain time. Check out their Etsy shop today and make sure to use GoodishGirls20 at checkout for 20% off.
Okay, question. Who's your book boyfriend of the day?
You know,
this is the hardest question.
Because, okay. I don't know if you've read The Cruel Prince yet.
I have not, but I'm sure somebody has.
Okay. Spoiler alert, but I'm still going to... No. I got played, okay?
Oh my God.
For it. I was like, I know I'm like the love interest that they first fall for. I'm like, I know better than to fall for them, but I did.
Was he blonde?
No, he was a redhead, and he reminded me of Lucian because he's even described as looking like a fox. I'm like, you know what other fox boy I love? But I was betrayed, and it's fine.
He can still be your book boyfriend of the day if you want him to.
He
can change too. It can be someone else tomorrow.
I'll say Cardin. Okay. I don't know much about him yet, but I do feel a little bit bad for him. Of how The Cruel Prince ended, and I just feel like he needs a little bit of moral support in this time.
Right,
and I will be
Cardin.
There to cheer him on.
I'm here for it. And what is something that Cardin would never do?
Oh gosh. Probably. No, he did that. I was gonna say never give a compliment, because it is a bully romance, and it is my first bully romance. What would he do?
No, what would he never do?
What would something he never do?
Yeah, something he would never do.
I'm trying to like replay in my head. He like would never lie.
Something like something that a man would do in the real world that is just like, ugh.
Cardin would never lie, because in this world, in ACOTAR, like, Feyre's like, oh, you guys can't lie. And they're like, yeah, we can.
Oh, they totally can.
But in The Cruel Prince, they truly cannot lie.
Would never tell a lie.
So he might be rude. He might bully me. But he's never going to lie.
I love it. Okay. All right. Here we go. We are back. Episode 2, Crescent City, House of Earth and Blood. For our friends who are listening, if you have read chapters 1-7, please listen to our first episode. With that, we're doing our episodes a little bit different than we normally would. So each episode is going to be a certain set of chapters, and then also previous chapters from the book. the first good chunk of the episode is not going to have a lot of spoilers in it, because we know that in the Sarah J. Maas universe, sometimes Crescent City can be a little bit overwhelming if you're first reading it. And with the houses and the characters and all the stuff that Sarah is throwing at us, we want you to enjoy this series just as much as we did. We want to break it down. We want to go into the theories with you, but we want you to fall in love with it first. So we are going to be going through each chapters, and going through the details and what happened, and we're going to give you certain points to keep in mind, certain references, certain characters. We're going to break down all the houses, all the gods and goddesses for you, all of the good things. So again, chapters 1 through 7 is in episode 1. Today we are covering chapters 8 through 13. So if you have read chapters 1 through 13, hang out with us, go through this amazing story. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about. So first we are going to take you through a guided tour of Crescent City. Again, spoiler free with that. But once that is done and your guided tour of this episode is over, we are going to introduce you to the theories of house and lore, where we will go into all of the things. We are going to deep dive. We have questions. As we get further into this book, the theories will get more in depth. The questions will get more in depth. If you have read this series and you want to stick around for that, absolutely. We want to hear all your thoughts. We want to go through all the things with you. If you have not read this series all the way, but you still want to stick around for that, that's okay too. That's fine. I'm cool with it. You may, again, there might be spoilers, but it's your life. You live it. All right. We are in chapter 8, part 2, The Trench. Again, welcome to your guided tour of Crescent City. We are now 22 months after the incident. We find Bryce at the White Raven hanging out in the bathroom with a lion shifter. She was there with it for a meeting with a vampire whose name is Maximus Tertian. He is 200 years old. He is unwedded, unmated, and he is son to Lord Cedrian, who is the richest of the Pangeran vamps. Now, again, this book has a ton of characters, like so many that sometimes they get a little jumbled. Even when I first read this series, I was like, wait, who is that again? So Maximus Tertian is going to be a name that you're going to want to remember, and He is a fairly important character for a moment. However, his dad, Lord Cedrian, is like, it's good to know that information, but it's not something that you need to like keep in your mind forever, right? Like, know that he's important, know that he's a big lord, and then kind of move on from that. Because again, there's a lot of characters in here, and you try to remember every single one of them, but you don't have to. That's okay. Mm-hmm. If he ever comes back up, we'll let you know. Bryce reflects on the past 2 years, and she's looking around the club, and she notes that it would never be her friends sitting there anymore, right? So Juniper and Fury, who are, again, her two friends, Juniper doing the ballet stuff, dancing, and then Fury being the mystery assassin, they've basically been MIA for this entire time. Juniper is busy with dance and recitals, and Fury has not answered a call or a message and has not come to town in a long time. So she kind of just, like, fell off the face of the earth. Maximus was a super creep and a major alpha hole, as Bryce would call him, right? So they're doing a business deal. He tries to lay on some super cringy lines, and Bryce is not here for it. She does need this deal to be done, though, so she doesn't say anything. She just kind of takes it. But during this time when they're like in the club, there's a lot of internal monologue, and we learn a little bit more about the drop. We learn that it is a necessary rite because each time someone makes the drop, raw, undiluted power of the first light is now available. Like, they're giving off this first light. And some is donated to the city. This is the only way to supply the power grid. And it was only during the drop that the flash of first light happens. Like, the first like breath of it, essentially. We are told that the first light can do a lot, right? It can heal, it can destroy, and everything else in between. They capture it in bottles, and the first part of it was used for healing. The rest is given to the power company. And again, this is used to power literally everything, like phones and cars and lights and all the things, right? A portion of it goes to make the spells that they need. But a piece of it went to higher up to the Republic to use as they see fit. Now, this right here, this line is very noteworthy. So when they do the drop, they give a little bit of their power, like almost like a payment, right, to go into the facility to do the drop. But a piece of it goes up to the Republic to use as they see fit. Keep that in mind. We will go back into that later down the line. The donation of light was set up specifically in a clean environment where the government could ensure they received every drop that was theirs to take. And this is all tracked by the Aleutian system. Every piece of energy that they emit is tracked, which gross. Like, that's such an overreach. I hate it. When I read that, I was like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Moving on, but I didn't like it. We know the drop is the easy part, right? Like, falling in is easy, but climbing back up is the hard part. It's like a runway that you have to run up it in your soul, in your mind, not on the outside. So they only had, once they do the drop, the body shuts down and they only have minutes before their brain is deprived of oxygen and they die, right? So having a person be your anchor was incredibly important. And the person who's the anchor is on like the outside, right? So you're like in your mind, in your body, in your soul, they're hanging out here. You drop in, you land, then you have to run up this runway and like shoot yourself up back into reality in a way, right? And so the person who is anchoring you has to have such a good connection with you that that they can hear you and you like you can hear them when they're trying to get you to come back, right? It's a big deal because if you don't come back, you just go into nothingness forever. So once they drop, like once they have dropped and they like shoot back up, they start their immortal life. Bryce and Danica, because remember Danica, right, from episode one, all that trauma, where they were supposed to make the drop together and celebrate their drop party at the White Raven, which is why Bryce is thinking about this in the moment because she's at that club. Once the deal with Maximus was done, we learned that Bryce would not receive any commission from this huge deal that she is making with him or any other deals brokered from the gallery. All proceeds went elsewhere. At this moment in time in this chapter, we do not know where they're going. We will find that out, though. So that is also kind of like a noteworthy moment, is that like she's brokering these deals, she's working hard, but she's receiving no extra funds from that because it's going to something else that is important. Just when Bryce was trying to leave, Maximus attempted to take more than he was entitled to. He grabs her wrist and doesn't let her leave. He's like holding on tight, right? Thankfully, Rune comes in and scares Maximus just enough for him to like flinch, right? And Bryce gets her wrist back. Thank you, Rune, Crown Prince of the Balvaran Fae.
Snaps for Rune.
Snaps. Thank you, Rune, for showing up. Bryce is pissed about it, but I appreciate you. So she grabs the folder and the money and walks away, letting him know that she doesn't do possessive and aggressive. Yes, Bryce. Snaps for Bryce. Meeting up with Rune at the bar, she like walks over, she leaves him, she's with Rune at the bar, and just when we thought he was her cousin this whole time, right, we come to find out that he is actually her brother. So this is a huge secret, and no one else knows, right? Like, Bryce knows, Rune knows, and obviously the king knows, who is the Autumn King, right?
And we Danica.
Yes, and Danica knew. So we know that, like, Rune is the Crown Prince, and the Autumn King in the Five Roses is their dad. Okay, so that's like a little family tree right there. While she's at the bar, we know that Bryce is drinking sparkling water. And this is important. It doesn't seem important, but it is, right? And Rune attempts to call her out for being so late and like partying out at night because she has to work in the morning. Like, bro, she's an adult. I love you, Rune, but that's not your place. But either way, I know it comes from a good place, but like, sit down. And she's literally working. She just did a business deal. Like, she's doing all the things that she's supposed to be doing. So anyway, she's drinking sparkling water. And we kind of learn a little bit more about, like, Rune and Bryce because their relationship's very strained. Back in the day, they were super close and they bonded over their hatred for their father, but Rune ruined that. It does not tell us in this moment what he did to ruin it, but he did some stuff. He did some things and they were not very nice. So we learned that the only reason Rune showed up tonight at this club was because the owner of the club, who is a butterfly shifter, which
he's
is
so cute,
wild. And he like, they describe him as like flying up above the club and the dancers, like just dancing and having the best time ever. Like, if you could be a shifter of any, like, what would you choose? Like, you can shift into any animal. What are you going to pick?
Such a good question. I don't know. I always feel like, because for whatever reason in college, like, an icebreaker was always like, if you could be any bird, what bird would you be? But I always would say like a hummingbird, because I'm like, no one
doesn't like a hummingbird?
That's true. Like, no tiny, one does. They're pretty. People be loving them.
You can get around.
I would be a bird that's like a menace.
Yeah.
like a tiny, cute menace. I'm trying to think.
Like Rowan.
Have you ever heard, you may have seen it, a red-legged Sarayama?
Mm-mm.
So they're these funny, they're tall, which is not me, but they're like really tall birds and they're kind of lanky and they just run around and cause chaos. And they, when they have their, like their prey, they like catch snakes and stuff and then they like smash them on the ground the whole time.
Oh my gosh.
And they like run around with it in their mouth. When I used to be like a diver in an aquarium, mm-hmm. and we had one that would just like roam, and he would like, his name was Nacho.
Aww.
And he would come over. Yeah, he was so cute. And he'd come over and take like the dive equipment and run around, and I'd have to go chase him down and be like, Nacho. I would be that. I would be Nacho from the aquarium specifically.
Oh my gosh.
So anyways, I don't know what kind of shifter I would be. I don't have an answer to that question. I wish I did. I am bad at deciding that kind of stuff. I honestly love the idea of being a wolf.
Yeah. I feel like, because the hardest thing about choosing shifting is I always overthink, because that's my speciality, mm-hmm. is I'm like, I want to be something that's not a prey item, but I also don't want to be like a predator that people also like actively go after.
If that makes sense. Yes. Deer shifter.
I thought about it because I know a really cool one, but I'm like...
We know a cool one.
But I'm like,
you, if you haven't read Crescent City yet all the way, you don't know the cool one yet, but you will. Don't worry.
She's really cool, guys.
She's very cool. I like the idea of being a deer shifter, like, so fast. Mm-hmm. Just running through the woods. Yes. Okay.
I am speed.
Ka-chow. All right. So, we know that Rune is there. The butterfly shifter called him and told him that something was happening that would essentially make the dancing stop. Right. Not necessarily like, oh, Bryce is in trouble, but like the vibe is off. So very butterfly shifter club owner-esque. Also, the Autumn King is requesting that Bryce lie low for the summit that is coming up, the big meeting that is happening. And he doesn't want any bad press. Right. So the summit meeting occurs every 10 years, a gathering of all of like Valbara's ruling powers to discuss issues or problems issued to them by the Asteri. And if you remember, The Valbars is like the smaller ruling powers, but then the Asteri is at the very, very top. So like they rule over Midgard and like the planet entirely, right? So like they're like the big, big in charge guys. Each territory in the Republic held a meeting on a rotating schedule. So one happened each year, right? So somewhere they happen somewhere in the world. But none of these meetings have anything to do with Bryce ever. So she's like, I don't know why a good old dad is like worried about this, right? Since the summit is happening locally, though, every high power in Crescent City is on edge. Rune tells her to be careful because a lot of people come out of the shadows during these meetings, and their father does not care about her safety at all, but Rune does. So he warns her out of concern. The Autumn King was riled up, and Rune hasn't seen him like this in 2 years, right? Since the incident. Bringing up anger and grief, Bryce shatters the glass that she's holding, right? Because he mentions it's been 2 years, and she, like, her fae instincts just kick in, and she shatters the glass, right? And everyone in the pack essentially pops up in her mind. So she's human, right? But she's also half fae, and she has a hard time holding in that fae anger. She finally takes a few breaths, and the rage she felt like went back into the box in her mind. So she finally cools down. And as she was leaving, Rune is upset she doesn't have a coat on because it's cold. Again, Rune, I love you, but like,
but that's, she's a grown cute woman.
It's cute if she does. She, like, they don't have a good relationship. And like, was he? They're fae. She's half fae. She's gonna be fine. It's just, it's, he's like, it's not even spring, bro. Chill out. Like, I do love Rune. Like, would die for him. But she's allowed to not wear a coat on. Like, it's fine. She mentions that her alcohol will keep her warm. But we know that that is not the truth, right? Because she has not touched a drink in 2 years. But no one else knows that. They all still see her as a party girl who drinks all week long. So Bryce is walking home and she can smell Rune following her to make sure she got home safe. And just as she was going inside her house, she flips him off and gets on the elevator in her very, very, very expensive apartment, a gift from Danica in her will. So we know that Bryce didn't buy this apartment. It was a gift from Danica left to her after her passing. Just as she is closing the door, Syrinx is asked to be let go from his cage. And if you remember, Syrinx was purchased by Jessaba to help Lahaba protect the books downstairs in the gallery. But now he lives with Bryce. And that is the end of chapter 8. Patootie. I know, he's the best. Little cutie. And that wraps up chapter 8. Now we go into chapter 9.
Chapter 9. Let us start.
There's a lot that goes on in chapter 9.
I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, we just completely flipped tones because we are learning now what makes the Umbra Mortis the Umbra Mortis.
The Umbra Mortis. Yes. The Umbra Mortis. Hunt Athalar.
I feel like he needs his own little audio, like how Rune has. Rune
Dane. Yes.
Crown. We need a Hunt Athalar.
Umbra Mortis. Shadow of Death. Yes. We should make one.
Add it to the to-do list.
Yes.
But yeah, chapter 9 opens up with Hunt doing Micah's bidding. So we get a little bit more of Hunt's really, really sad backstory. Put him in the bubble. So Hunt was essentially, he dated a girl called Shahar, who was the general for the rebellion of the Fallen and the commander of the 32nd, I believe it was. But after that happened, he became part of the Fallen, and all of the Fallen were put into service for their betrayal. So we learn about the history and who he has had to go through ownership-wise. So his first owner, very, very cruel, is Shahar's twin sister, Sandriel. And she was actually, I didn't realize this. I thought she was like, she owned him, but she's actually a third of the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But she is an archangel of the Northwestern Quadrant. She owned Hunt for 53 years.
Yeah, so she was essentially like how Micah is the governor here, like she is the governor over there.
Mm-hmm.
So like to kind of put in perspective like who she is politically, she's pretty high up there. But like and Shahar was like the love of Hunt's life.
Sure, right? Was.
Can you imagine this person, this archangel who now owns you, looks identical to the person who like meant the most to you in the world? Like there is no more pure form of torture than that.
That's like torture in itself. But she was like, don't worry, I got more tricks up my sleeve.
Oh, she sure did.
But we learn more about Shahar and Sandriel. And Sandriel, fun fact, actually killed her parents and blamed it on assassins. And there was never any proof to claim who done it. Mm-hmm. But we know who did it. Mm-hmm. And she essentially, Hunt's task is to track and dispatch loose demons that make their way through rifts and portals.
Mm-hmm.
Sandriel thought that she could break Hunt not only by looking like his lover, but he spent time in a bloodsucked dungeon ship number one. He also was put into an arena, gladiator style, and had to be pitted against other warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, he was in charge of assassinations. So homeboy went through it.
He sure did.
But after Sandriel and the other two-thirds, eventually he is owned by his current owner, Micah, who is the current Archangel of Valbara. And he essentially, we learned this in this chapter, that he offered Hunt a deal 4 years ago, and he essentially has to, in order to talk about potentially being free, not necessarily he will be, but just the idea, is he has to kill for Micah and essentially meet the same number of the people that not only Hunt killed, but also every other person who was under Hunt's command. Mm-hmm. So that brings up a whopping number of 2,217 deaths.
Ouch.
And not only does Hunt have to actively go out and kill these people, he has to do it specifically the way that Micah instructs.
Yes.
Which is brutal. Because mm-hmm. there are easier and quicker ways for him to do it. But if Micah wants it dragged out, that's what Hunt has to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we also learn that deaths owed, 2,217. Hunt mm-hmm. on 82, baby.
Yeah. It's not like, okay, here's like 50 a week, right? It's just mm-hmm. like when Micah sees fit or someone makes Micah upset or Micah gets an enemy, like he's like, okay, Hunt is now dispatched. So this could take
years.
This could take years, centuries. Like this could take a really long time. And he has been there for a really long time, like with Micah. So there is no like actual time frame, just whenever Micah sees fit.
That's awful in itself. Because,
yeah.
And I didn't even think of it until I did the reread, but I'm like, Micah could easily also be like, do I have people that need to be killed? Yes, but I'm going to have like Isaiah do it or someone else. Mm-hmm. And like essentially stealing from Hunt's like quota that he has to meet, which is also rude.
Do you think he would have done that? Like, do you think that's 100%. I don't think it ever mentions that he did do that, but
I could see him doing it. He's sleazy enough.
Yeah. That's I mean, he's an archangel, right? Like we know later on in the book that like the archangels are they're their own like special weird things.
They're
right?
on their own little high horse and they all think that they're all that in a bag of chips.
Yeah, because they're all in charge. Essentially, because we know that the Asteri is above that in every way, and they are truly in charge.
Yeah, because essentially you have like archangels top of the totem pole. I think underneath it is essentially the archangels who all go by a governor title, and they have their own regions that they control over. And then under that, you have like your area specific rulers.
Correct. So yeah, like
with
the
Fae,
the Under King,
the Autumn King. Mm-hmm. For the wolves, you have Sabine and the Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. Like the River Queen, all of those guys are like under that.
But then towards the end of the chapter, just a fun little nugget, we also learn that Hunt doesn't just go by Hunt. He was actually named Orion, which means the hunter, and that's how he got his little nickname Hunt.
Hunt by his mom. Cute. Oh, Hunt. Sweet boy.
Hunty.
He's been through a lot. Like, no joke.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah. Him having to atone for all of those deaths is wild. Like, I mean, it has to happen and he doesn't have a choice. So, right. Yeah. So he has the tattoo on his forehead, like the halo essentially. So it's tattooed on him. There's a tattoo on his wrist. Like he's truly owned, right? And it makes his magic not as strong as it could be. So he really doesn't have a choice in what he's doing. I do find it interesting and can appreciate how – this is going to sound like weird, but how Micah gives them some freedom. And I say some freedom very loosely, right? Like he's allowed to like go out for beers or he's allowed to like – go do something he wants to do, right? Mm-hmm. He just has to be there when Micah calls and he can't make a scene anywhere. He can't like get into trouble or anything like that, right? So like, as long as he's doing his job, like he's allowed, he like can play video games at night. So like it is still slavery, it is still no freedom, but it could be worse because you could be with Sandriel in a dungeon or in like some sort of arena.
Yeah, that's just also crazy. Also, it might pick up, might not, but if you hear thunder in the background, welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.
Anytime I heard thunder or lightning, I'd be like, ugh, there goes Zayden and Violet. But now that I'm rereading Crescent City, I'm just like, ugh, Hunt's in the area.
There goes Hunt! Hunt Athalar!
The Umbra Mortis is in town.
Yes! That's funny. I love that. And that kind of wraps up chapter 9. Like, we get a lot of information in that chapter, and then we, like, quickly move on. So chapter 10, we go back. So we're going, like, back and forth. Like, we go back to Bryce. She's back in the gallery. So she's showing a couple some art in the gallery when a buzz happened at the door. Through the camera, Bryce could see two angels on the screen. Hunt and Isaiah stood outside, but they could not see the cameras. They were, like, looking around, and they're like, that's weird that Jessica doesn't have any cameras. But we know that there are cameras there. Jessica's like so good at hiding them though. So they were not allowed to enter immediately because of all of the spells. So Jessica has this place on lockdown, even to the Umbra Mortis himself. Side note, we know that obviously the angels are owned by Micah, right? They are slaves. And he's not required to pay them, but he does pay them a pretty hefty salary. It doesn't tell us, like, how much, but I kind of – that notes to, like, the last thing I said where, like, he doesn't have to let them play video games, but he does, or he doesn't have to, like, do these things, but he does pay them. So, I mean, as far as, like, the archangels go, like, it's not terrible, I guess, you know? So I thought that – I just thought that was interesting. Isaiah wonders if Bryce is even at the gallery because no one is answering. Sweet Isaiah. He's like, I wonder, is she even home? Like, is she here? And Hunt's like, she's here. I can literally smell her on the sidewalk. Which, like, again, side note. Absolutely not. Yes, Bryce smells nice. Yes, it's a nice scent on the sidewalk. What other smells are on the sidewalk? What else do we have to smell that we don't have a choice of? I don't want that. And you know why I don't want that and how I know? I've never had face senses, obviously. But I have had pregnancy senses, and those are wild. I could smell the apples in the grocery store. I'm walking through the produce aisle, and I can smell the apples. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. But you know what else is nice? Not nice, other things that I can smell that I didn't want to. There's no turning it off. And I think that's the closest thing that we will get to face senses. So if you're a woman and you have had a baby, you probably understand. That's a no for me.
Yeah, even, like, every now and then, because I'm a sensitive stomach girly, like, my nose will pick up certain things that, like, no one else smells. And, oh gosh, there was something. So my sister threw away, like, bad cheese.
No.
And no one could smell it. And I, like, had just gotten out of the shower. And as soon as I opened the door, I was like, what is that smell? And everyone's like, what smell? I'm like, there is a smell.
It's in there.
In this house that is a smelly smell. And it needs to get out. And so, like, we were literally, like, walking around trying to find this smell, and they found, like, it was still in the garbage. So they, like, put the garbage outside, and they were, like, lighting candles, trying to get it out. But I was like, I gotta go sit outside. This is way too stink for me.
Yeah. No joke. Ugh. I hate it. That face senses is a no for me. Faye, like, sight, like, the smelling healing? Is
too much of, like, a big advantage. Like, that's, like, no.
Yeah, you can't get away from anything. You have no secrets because they can smell everything on you. Like,
and your emotions, essentially.
And your emotions, yes. And the one thing that I took away from this, like, in all of these fantasy books, like, with these, is, like, they schooled their face into neutrality. That is something that I am desperately trying to do, because every single one of my emotions is on my face at all times.
Oh, I got a great poker face, especially whenever it comes to reading spicy scenes.
Oh, like that. Yeah, like that's – I'm talking about, like, when someone is speaking. Oh. If I don't like what they're saying, I'm like – this is the face, like – the girls – Alyssa and Cass call it the snake face, because there's the that, like, green – that green snake, the meme. She's like
– that's funny.
So, like, if I'm at a meeting and I don't like what they're saying,
just
– and then I have to be, like – in my mind, I'm like, she schooled her face to neutrality. Got it. Like – and then they say something stupid and my eye twitches.
Not the eye twitch.
Not that I'm like, oh, stop. What you're saying is stupid. So, yeah, I'm working on it. So if I could have, like, still face senses, that'd be great. Just not scent.
Yeah, because you can school your face as much as you want, but they're like, I smell something.
Yeah, I smell all the emotions. I hate it. No, that's a no for me. I hate it. So anyways, Bryce gets a little sassy on this intercom, right? Angels are outside. Sweet Isaiah's like, is she even there? Hunt knows she's there. And she gets a little spicy. She, like, gets in the intercom. She gives them both a really hard time. And we are reminded of the world's assumption of her. A stupid party girl, right? In the book, as it's going, you could hear, like, Hunt's thoughts being like, stupid party girl. Like, she must blah, 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 blah. And she, as she lets the clients out of the gallery that she had in there, she slams the door on both of these angels, which is hilarious. Hunt gets real pissy and attempts to use his lightning on the iron door. It makes zero difference. So he used another tactic, which sucks. He says, "We're here about a murder." And the iron door opened. So he knew that that would work. He knew that it would, like, hit a nerve, right? So as they entered the gallery, and they already knew a lot about the place, even though they have never been there, right? They know about Jessica's office upstairs. They know about the basement-ish. They know there, like, is one. They don't know what exactly is down there. So Isaiah tells Bryce someone was murdered outside of the meat market that she knew. And she says, they say Maximus Tertian was murdered 2 hours ago. Or, like, 2 hours, like, after, like, she met with Bryce. So we see in that moment some relief on Bryce because it wasn't someone that she cared about, right? Like, she was tensed. And you don't really hear Bryce's thoughts for this moment, but, like, was it Rune? Or was it, like, Ethan? Or was it somebody else, right, she was nervous about? But it wasn't. Thankfully, it was just Maximus Tertian, which, again, in the previous chapter, we learned, like, she met with him for a business deal. And he, like, came on too strong, tried to take something he didn't deserve, and then Rune comes in and he leaves, right? So that's where they were with that one. Yeah. She's really struggling right now, right? Because obviously it's bringing up a lot of things from the past. So Bryce asks if she is a suspect, right? Because, like, why else would they be there? And it's noted that she doesn't seem upset that he's dead. Bryce explains what happened at the White Raven, which we just talked about, and assumes that if he was killed outside of the meat market, he was probably headed inside the meat market to purchase something illegal. And we learned that, like, the meat market is, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the black market, but in real life. Like when I heard as a younger person the black market, mm-hmm. I assumed that there was somewhere in the world where you would drive to and go to and walk in, and you're, like, in the black market, right? There's, like, booths and tarps and things, and it's, like, real. No one told me that the black market is not that at all.
That's so funny.
There's no way I was the only one. When you hear about it, it's not like I've ever been there. I've never gone to the black market, right? Like, just, oh, I think I have thunder too now. Amazing. So it's wild. So, like, what you would imagine the black market to be when you're explaining it, that's what the meat market is. Mm-hmm. It's like vendors selling weird things, right?
Or it's kind of like, I forgot what the exact location is called, but, like, whenever you read Harry Potter, there's, like, Diagon Alley, and then there's the little side street that in mm-hmm. Chamber of Secrets, whenever he, like, does the little flu powder thing, he messes up because he says, like, Diagon Alley.
Oh, yep. Like,
diagonally.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up, like, in the shady part.
Yeah. That's what that's essentially what it is. It's where, like, you can buy some regular things, but you mostly mm-hmm. can buy some things that you probably shouldn't have. Yeah, exactly. So that's a little bit about, like, what the meat market is. So Bryce notes that the meeting didn't even need to be at the Raven, right? She notes that Maximus, like, wanted it to be there because he wanted attention. He wanted to see, like, everyone around him to see that he was doing things, like, making deals, right? Because, again, his dad was a really powerful lord, and he's, like, trying to find his place, I guess. They also, as the essentially, like, the angel police, right, they start to profile Bryce. And they note that her parents are not wealthy, but she has a really nice apartment on the upper side. And they assume it is because she either gets paid really well by Jessica or she does shady things that they do not know about. And I get it in a way, right? Like, they're profiling her. They're trying to figure out, like, this murder mystery, which I love a good murder mystery. And I think that's a big part of why I really liked this book specifically, is because I watch all the crime shows. I am Law and Order girly. Like, if I could be anybody, be Olivia Benson. Like, so I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to solve a murder. Amazing. Let's do it. So I'm 100% here for this, right? So they asked her all of these things and all these questions, but they already knew what happened at the club. They already knew Rune was at the club. They already know all these things because there's cameras literally every 2 seconds. They know all the things, right? They're just asking her anyways to, like, see her emotions or see what her reaction is or if she'll lie, all the things. We learn that the two angels fought together on Mount Hermon as well. So, like, Isaiah and Hunt's backstory. Hunt was above Isaiah in rank there, but not here. Here, Isaiah is above him and Hunt is second in command at the 33rd, which is, like, the angel police station. we find out that Isaiah killed 300 Imperial legionaries and Hunt has to repay for each one of them. So that 300 is in that 2000 number of repaying debts. Normally crimes in are like auxiliary territory. So like there's like a, which is like the, I guess the, to put it in weird, like layman's terms, like they're like the detectives of crime, right? Like the theft unit or like the gang unit or the murder unit, like that kind of stuff. So like auxiliary, they would normally take over these kind of things. So Bryce questions why they're there wasting their time as like these really high up angels, right? And commanders. Bryce gives them her alibi for her walk home and that Rune walked her home. Again, they already knew this with all the cameras, but she gave it to them anyways. They Hunt starts thinking about like the injury on her leg and like he like brings it up and he's like, well, she probably had it removed as possible 2 years ago because party girls don't like to have blemishes on them, right? And then she's judged on her aromatherapy oil diffuser.
I'm like, so such an odd thing to like
yeah
focus on.
It is. He's like, oh, she's one of those. She has oils in because the air.
He messes up his smelling. He can't track anything because there's lavender in the air. Can't
smell anything.
Curse you, yeah, and eucalyptus. I was like,
so this happens a little, like quite a bit for Bryce, and I'm breaking up these details because they are going to be important later on in the book, right? Like she's a party girl, and she probably had her scar removed immediately, and she has the oil diffusers, and she drinks all the time. So like these are things that like from the outside looking in on Bryce, this is what people see. So Isaiah questions the relationship between her and Rune and thinks that he could be a suspect because if he was, it would really suck for them because trying to interrogate Rune and the Autumn King would be awful. It would be terrible and it would make it a really hard time. So he's like, you could be a suspect. Funny. I really hope you're not though. So because if Maximus Tertian was being rude to Bryce, right, or coming on a little hard, it could be in Rune's area, I guess, to maybe go get revenge for whatever Bryce is to him, right? And she's like, we're cousins. We know that they're not cousins, but like again, nobody mm-hmm. else knows that. Then Isaiah finally tells her why they are actually at this gallery today. They're like beating around the bush the whole time. The governor himself, Micah, is on the way there right now, and Jessica Roga is to be on the line when he arrives. And again, Jessica Roga is the owner of the art gallery that Bryce works at. This is why the Triari are a part of this and not the auxiliary. So again, for clarification, the Triari are the angels who are slaves and work directly for Micah versus the auxiliary who is like the side, like army or police or whatever you want to call them, right? So this is a huge deal because the governor himself is showing up. Bryce keeps asking why he is on the way, why is he coming to the gallery, and why Jessica needs to be on the phone. And it is then finally revealed that Maximus Tertian was killed the exact same way that Danica and the Pack of Devils were killed. Which is like a huge blow to Bryce. It is reminded to us that Philip Briggs killed the Pack 2 years ago, and he could not have anything to do with the murder of Maximus because he is in a super secure facility far worse than prison. So if you guys remember, Philip Briggs was he was like part of the human rebellion, and he was attempting to bomb the White Raven, and Danica and the Pack stopped him and put him in prison. He then got out of prison, which is why Danica was so upset before she died. And so they assumed that it was him. They arrested him. He went back to prison. So she's like, hold on. The cause of death is the same between the two, but he couldn't have done it because he's in prison, right? So there is a huge possibility that he did not kill the Pack at all. No details of the case were released. So they're like the theory of a copycat is also not possible. This is where I love this crime stuff. I'm so here for it. I can't be a copycat because no stuff got out. No stuff leaked mm-hmm. from this. However, every person killed in this manner has had contact with Bryce before they died, which is a huge red flag, right? So even though Bryce had them both like introduce themselves, like she was like, well, who are you? And he's like, well, I'm Isaiah and I'm blah, blah, blah. Everyone knew, like she knew who they were. Everyone knew who the commander of the 33rd was and who the Umber Mortis is, right? Like it's a literal shadow of death. So I just thought it was funny. She's like, who are you guys again?
Mm-hmm.
So very much like a wall or like a way for Bryce to protect herself. It's like, who are you?
Sometimes so, you just need to be humbled.
100%. You're going to try to open that door? No, you're not. Who are you? What's your name again? Have we met before?
You are?
Yeah, exactly. So Bryce informs Jessica while they're there and that the governor's on the way. She like calls her and Jessica's like, oh my God. So we know that Philip Briggs was seen buying black summoning salt before the murders. So that is big evidence that was used against him. He was also planning on using that salt to build some sort of weapon. So it is assumed that he summoned the demon to kill the pack, because you have to use the salt to summon the demon. And it happened to attack a soldier in an alleyway, and then he sent him back to hell. So if you guys remember, as Bryce found the pack, spotted the demon chasing him with a table leg in hand, there is a soldier in the alleyway that was attacked that she attempted to save, which is why she got bit on the leg. And then the demon got away. So Briggs never confessed to any of this. And at this point, we do not know what type of demon this was, which that part is important. That part will come back. So it's important that at this moment in time, we don't know what species of demon it was. We do know that Jessica needs to make sure that Maximus's father does not show up to this gallery while the governor is there and accuse Bryce of anything, because we know, again, he's a powerful lord. Like, he is going to be ridiculous about all these things. And then we do get a flashback on how Jessica treated Bryce 2 years ago and when this all went down, like when the pack died. She demanded she get back to work and get stuff done, or she would turn her into a pig. And that's Jessica animal threat number three. Jessica instructed Bryce to make sure everything in the gallery was on lockdown before Micah arrived, and that she did, aka everything downstairs. And she's like, ran into action. Everything is being closed up. And that brings to close chapter 10.
And then chapter 11, Micah actually gets there. And so the first time I read this, I like read it book form. The second time, I recently learned that in Libby, if you have a library card, you can use the Libby app, mm-hmm. register your card to check out books like you would a Kindle, and you can actually transfer it on your Kindle. Or they also have audiobooks, and they actually do have the graphic audio, and it was my first graphic audio that I ever listened to, and I highly enjoyed it. But reading and like picturing a voice is different from hearing a voice that is assigned. So Micah comes in, Bryce talks about like, oh, everyone knows who Micah is, and she was saying how good he looks, how good his voice sounds. I'm just like, okay, it can't be that good. And then he spoke.
It was so good.
And then I was like, you know what? I get it. Because, fun fact, the graphic audio, the voice actor who voices Micah is the same voice actor. It is Gabriel Michael, who voices Lucian in the ACOTAR series.
Oh.
And our favorite wing leader, Zayden Ryerson.
Oh, okay. All mm-hmm. right.
Because whenever I listen to his voice, I'm like, why does this sound familiar? And then I Googled it, and I was like, oh, it's Zayden. So I had a hard time trying to, like, differentiate the two and, yeah. like, being like, this isn't Zayden. Like, it's fine. It's a different person. But yeah, his voice, Bryce, girl, I get it. But essentially, we learn the only information Bryce gives is how good his voice sounds and mm-hmm. how good he looks, because yep. homegirl fell asleep in history. So we do not know his history, which I'm like, this is kind of important information that I would have liked to learn about.
Yes.
But it's fine. The only snippets that we get from Bryce, because she fell asleep, is that Micah is an archangel. He is one of 10. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned earlier, they all go under a governor status name. And essentially, some angels, like Hunt, have the ability to just demolish towns and cities, but archangels mm-hmm. have so much power that they could easily level an entire metropolis if they wanted to. And no one Wild. Really knows what Micah's power is. It's assumed he has a power.
Mm-hmm.
If only someone would have stayed awake in history class, we would know. Maybe.
I have a hard time judging her, because I remember specifically napping in science class almost every day really? In junior highest. Oh, yes.
It was science so boring. Girly.
I like science. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like that science class. And I was mm-hmm. like, falling asleep in the back, like just sleeping.
Wow.
So I can't judge her because I have been there.
I judged harshly. But we also learn that a little bit more about archangels is that they're actually can be bred by the Asteri. So it's essentially like another little chess piece in the Asteri's overall game, because archangels answer directly to the Asteri. So it's within the Asteri's interest to bestow archangel titles as well as control like who is an archangel and what qualities they want them to specifically have.
Also a huge overreach again.
And like we mentioned before, the Asteri are these otherworldly beings that essentially rule over everybody. And they're going into this meeting, and Micah and Jezebah are talking. We also learn a little bit more about Jezebah, that she was a or is a witch. Bryce describes her sometimes as like an enchantress, but she specifically is a witch who defected herself. But she never refers to herself as a witch because that door is closed. And she, like we learned in previous chapters, she falls under the Underking's ruling and claimed House of Shadows, Flame and Shadows. But as they're talking, Micah eventually gets down to the point, and he's like, I want Bryce to find out who this murderer is. And that's where that chapter ends. It ends like on a big, big note.
Detective Bryce on the case.
Time to Scooby-Doo all this.
Officer Bunny Hops.
Oh my gosh.
On the case.
Bryce is not bubbly enough to be Judy Hopps. She would hate it.
Oh, she would. I mean, that's great. Yeah, no, that, and again, this is why, like, I think some people have a hard time getting into this book if you're like going in expecting fantasy, right? Because we know we've read Throne of Glass, we've read ACOTAR, like all of that stuff. And then you get this realistic but fantasy world with like cell phones and TVs and all cars, all these things. And then there's like murder mystery happening, and now we're detectives. And I'm 100% here for this. It's so different. It's so interesting.
So ACOTAR was the first series I read by SJM, and I was in a brutal hangover after Silver Flames. And before my friend and I read Throne of Glass, she's like, you gotta read Crescent City, it's my favorite. So I went straight from Silver Flames to Crescent City, and it was like whiplash, because they were like, oh, we have guns, we have phones. I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It's wild.
I also just couldn't picture it. So I had to avoid spoilers. I had my friend be like my fan art dealer and like send me fan art of like what Crescent City is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And I feel like now in my head, I picture it a little bit differently. But whenever I first read it, she was like, kind of picture, like, for whatever reason, she described it best as like kind of New Orleans-ish vibes. I don't know what city you think of whenever you think of Crescent City.
You know, I've never been to New York, but I assumed like Times Square. The one part of New York that you see on the TV, right? Like, just everything is smooshed together. Like, everything is busy and bustling all the time. Like, certain parts of that, like, in the inner city. Like, I assume, like, the White Raven was, like, a downtown, like, fun club. And then, like, certain parts are, like, you have, like, different areas. Yeah. So, like, I assume, like, the White or, the Five Roses is, like, a little bit more spread out and spacious and, like, with gardens and things like that. So, like, each place that you go to, I assumed it was a little bit different, but I assumed in the middle was like skyscrapers, like everything is super close together, 100 floors up.
The only thing that I kind of pictured as skyscrapers is like specifically the central business district.
Because I'm like, yeah, and like, like the 33rd is probably huge, right? Like all of those areas I assumed were pretty big. And like Bryce's apartment, I think, is pretty high up too.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Just a little fun thought.
Yeah. So then we go into chapter 12. Jezebah cuts in, right? And this, I'm going to restart that. Hold on. So we go into chapter 12. They are trying to figure out whether or not Bryce is going to work with them. So Micah's like, I want Bryce to be a part of this, right? Jessica cuts in and questions the angel's competency for needing her assistant to help them solve a murder and throws a dig in there about having the wrong man behind bars, which that's so ballsy and I love it. She's like, why? You guys are literally archangels. Like, what are you? What is happening right now? It's noted that not many people can speak to Micah that way, but Jessica literally doesn't care. Which, good for her. Like, that's a valid point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She's like, why do you need my assistant? We know that she's 400 years old and reports to the Underking. Again, we've said that before. And she can transform people into animals. Again, she left her clan as a witch to join the House of Flame and Shadow. Reasons unknown. But she is very important. She's going to be an important character throughout the book. So that is definitely a name you want to remember. Micah informs he only invited Jessica to this meeting in her own gallery with her assistant. As a courtesy. So there's that. So even though Briggs is most likely not the killer of the pack, he will stay in prison, though, because enough evidence of his prior crimes has been found and they reconvicted him again for those, right? So either way, Philip Briggs is not getting out of prison. Micah also states that there is still a killer on the loose, and with the summit coming up and bringing some very interesting individuals to town to attend, that they will see this scandal as weak. And a weak point to show that Micah is not in control, which makes him look real bad. So he is very stressed about this whole thing. During the summit, Micah will have all of the angels in a flight formation with full armor, including gold breastplates. And it's a very little tidbit, but these angels like wearing the gold breastplates is kind of an Easter egg. So just keep that in mind. This is sickening to Hunt because we are reminded that the angels are slaves and they don't have a choice. So they have to fly in formation. They have to do as he is saying. They have to put on the full armor, even though it's for a cause they do not stand for. We learn that Hecubus, who is the old witch queen, has passed away, and that the summit will then recognize the new witch queen. So that is an important kind of piece of information as well. And then we learn that Sandriel, who we talked about prior, who was a one-third owner of Hunt, is being sent to the summit by the Asteri, who again are the top dogs, essentially, to deliver a report from the Senate on the human rebel conflict, which again is that human war happening across the sea. Okay. She is staying at it as a guest with Micah for a month. And if Sandriel found out about this demon that can kill the Vanir and the humans, then she would for sure tell the Asteri, right? Hunt did not know this information. So this was a brutal blow for Hunt in that moment. We do not know a lot about Sandriel, right, at this moment, other than she was a monster and she made the Umbra Mortis himself tense up and sweat. Just the sound of her name is like tense for him, which is wild because he's so tough and nothing really gets to him. This is also where we learn about Pollux Antonius's presence at the summit as well, right? He is Sandriel's commander. So he's essentially the Isaiah of the situation, but for Sandriel. So he is called the Hammer, and he's a motherfucking asshole. So there. Oh, thunder. Look at that. That was good timing.
We're recording Hunt.
He wants us to know about Pollux.
He's like, listen about this guy.
He's like, listen up. So Bryce asks about the angel in the alley that was attacked and that she saved. And Micah told her the angel had no memory about this situation and moved on. That is an Easter egg. Do not forget that line. Okay. I'm not going to tell you why yet. We'll get there eventually. Again, this is a guided tour of Crescent City, but that is a big piece of information. We still do not know, again, the type of demon that was there, but we learn a little bit more about Hell itself and the seven princes that guard a territory below them. Each one gets worse as you go lower down. So you have the hollow and then the trench, the canyon, the ravine, the chasm, the abyss, and then the pit, the very bottom. We can guess that because the demon was so bad that it most likely came from the pit, which again is the very, very, very bottom. It didn't need light to survive. But with Hunt, though, that doesn't matter, like whether or not it needed light, because he could kill it all the same. With his lightning, demons from any lair in hell did not stand a chance. Because again, he was originally killing demons that came through any sort of like rift, right? So Hunt is like in space somewhere else with all of this information that was just being thrown at him. So Bryce brought him back to reality with her voice, asking what the connection was besides the cause of death that brought these two murders together. Micah informs her that Danica and Maximus Tertian were friends, and Bryce argues with him. She's like, she would have told Bryce, right? She's like, she would have told me. Micah notes that there are most likely lots of things that Danica didn't tell her. And it's also interesting because Bryce knew them both and had contact with them both. So she's not a suspect, but she like also kind of is a suspect at the same time. She has not been ruled out, as they would say. She is still a person of interest.
Which I think is so odd because in the beginning of chapter 6, I believe it was, Isaiah like specifically made sure that she was not a suspect. Like,
right.
Even at this point, I don't think I would have made her a suspect. I would definitely rope her in since the only connection mm-hmm. is that, like, so far that everyone who has been killed has been seen with Bryce.
Right.
I don't know. That doesn't make sense as to why she would be a suspect. Like, for Tershawn, maybe. but for the pack of devils, like, I'm like, you guys know she wasn't there. Like, she found them. So I'm like,
exactly. I think they're doing it more as like guilt. Right. Now she has to work hard to clear her name. Right. She's mm-hmm. a person of interest. So she needs to be involved in this so she can help prove that she is not. Right. There's like a little bit of leverage over her. It would be my guess. So the rest of the pack has been investigated and are cleared of anything odd, but Danica's history remained. So like Connor, all those guys, they've been cleared. Bryce questions why the other auxiliaries are not being brought in on this to help. And I mean auxiliaries from like other territories. Micah is terrified of this case getting out, right? Because if word gets out and the Hind finds out who is Lydia Servos, who is a deer shifter and the best spy finder and breaker there ever was, and also lovers to Pollux, who, again, the hammer, if she finds out, then she will report it directly to the Asteri. Okay, that is a lot of information you are given right there, and it is important, okay? So, again, we have Lydia Servos and Pollux, the Hind and the hammer. Lydia, who is a deer shifter, and we kind of get a light introduction to Sandriel's Triari. So, again, you have the Triari for Micah, who is, like, Hunt, Isaiah, all of those guys, and then you have Sandriel's Triari, who is the hammer, the Hind. And then you get a smidge. You get the harpy. And we don't know her name yet. She will come back. So just remember that. The harpy. Micah thinks Bryce can help solve this case because she knew Danica better than anyone. Jessica agrees to loan Bryce to the governor but asks for compensation in return. He says that just because she has the Under King's protection does not change the fact that she is just a citizen. However, Jessica breaks out the fucking bylaws and quotes section 57. If a government official requires the services of an outside contractor, they are to pay. And he's like, fine, send the invoice to me, which is hilarious. She freaking kills me. Everything about her. The Hind is a deer shifter. Pollux is not a shifter. We don't know anything about the harpy at this point in time. So Micah is out of options and will soon be out of time. So Bryce is the last hope to map out Danica's last known whereabouts before she died, because they were the closest, right? Micah states Hunt Athalar is experienced in hunting demons and will be assisting her on this search. He didn't realize that either until that moment. So he essentially has to babysit a party girl 24/7, but he will also be away from Sandriel and her Triari during this time. So that is a huge relief to him. So he's like, I guess this is like the worst or like the best case scenario of these two things. Mm-hmm. Bryce agrees to find whoever did this, but demands they are wiped off the fucking earth. Micah states the justice system will handle them, but there is unspoken promise there that they will be taken care of. Jessica reminds Bryce not to die during this because finding a new assistant is hard. Love her. And as everyone went their separate ways, Hunt demanded that Bryce make two lists, one with the whereabouts of like where Danica, where she was before she died, and another with the possible suspects. So she then turned on the enchantment spells in the front door that zapped Hunt and told him not to bother her until she called him and closed the door. Erd fucking spare him. End chapter 12.
Thinking of getting a Kindle soon? Here is a 30-day free trial for Kindle Unlimited from your host of the Goodish Girls podcast. Link in our show notes.
I can't.
There are sometimes like things Bryce does is like, was that really necessary?
Yeah, I know, but it's so funny though. He needs to be humbled. Ugh, she's not here for any alcohol.
Yeah, there is one thing that I'll bring up in a future chapter that she does, but I was like, really?
Really?
Give the guy a break.
She's so spicy. Every time.
Chapter 13, like, it has important information, but there wasn't a lot that I was like, oh, you really need to piece these things out. Some of the more important things is it opens up with Hunt, Isaiah, and Micah having a little powwow on the roof. And they learn that not only is, as we just learned, that like Micah is putting Bryce on this thing because he doesn't want to appear as someone who does not have control over his own city. But also Sabina's also putting the packs on this case now too, because now she's involved and she wants to figure this thing out as well.
Yeah. And a reminder of Sabine, if you forgot who she was, she's trash. She's trash. Yes. Yes. She is Danica's mother, who is the like the prime apparent when the prime passes away.
But one of the more key important things to mention in this little chapter is that Micah decides to make a deal. And he tells Hunt that if he solves this case before the summit, that he will lower his debt to 10 more assignments.
And from like over 2,000.
And homeboy is at 82. So he'd only have to do 92 more kills. And if he does this, which this is where Micah really irks me, is even if he does do those 10 kills, it's not and then you'll be free, it's then I'll maybe revisit the idea of potentially removing your tattoos.
So it's a very big incentive for Hunt, even just the possibility of being closer to freedom.
But Micah makes that deal, Hunt accepts it, and then Micah goes off to where it's just now Hunt and Isaiah on the roof. And then they talk a little bit more about Sandriel. And Micah, again, essentially puts Hunt on Bryce duty, but just to help Hunt out, Isaiah has Bryce watch her 24/7 just to help keep him out of the condominium while Sandriel and Pollux and co. are there. So that's pretty much like the big things to take away from the chapter is that Hunt was given a new deal by Micah. Isaiah is helping him out, and Hunt doesn't have to be in the condominium and to watch Bryce. And then just a fun little thing that they put at the end of the chapter, which I don't think is a big thing, but it's something that reoccurs, is the idea that Bryce has of potentially filling out all of these different job applications to potentially leave Griffin Antiques.
Yes. Girl is trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life. It's in a really tough 2 years. She is thinking about going somewhere else. We'll see where that lands her.
And that's pretty much where chapter 13 ends.
That's wild. Yeah, it's a short chapter, but it like it has some really like key important details, right? Like we know that Isaiah is a good friend. Like Isaiah is, I wouldn't say he's not an important character. He's not like a main character, but I would say he is a solid side character. And he is one we can trust. Thank you, Isaiah, being good for being good man. So that's all. Yeah, that kind of wraps up our chapters for the week. So thank you for hanging out with your guided tour of Crescent City with your hosts.
We want to visit the House of Theories and Lore?
I would like to go to the House of Theories and Lore. Yes, I have some questions in there. So if you have read this series and or the Massverse series, stick around. We're going into the House of Theories and Lore. If you have not and you do not want any spoilers, now is where you will exit. If you have not, but you want the tea anyways, you can stick around. But don't say I didn't warn you. Yes, House of Theories and Lore. Okay, let's get into it. What do you have for us today, Madison?
So I don't have theories, but I have lore. Because I just want to add to the chaos. So for this little tidbit, you have to have read ACOTAR and Throne of Glass. So one thing is, if you read Silver Flames, whenever Nesta is doing her little stairs and she's trying to do the thing, at one point, I think it's her first attempt of the stairs, I think she gets so dizzy and nauseated that she like trips and falls.
Mm-hmm.
But she like grabs onto the stone wall. Mm-hmm. And whenever she sees where she grabbed it, she sees slice marks.
Yeah.
Almost like she had nails made of iron.
Mm-hmm. Kinda like some witches, I've heard this theory.
So people think, because there's also many theories that Mama Archeron was not human. Because like in book one, I believe it was, Tamlin specifically says, "I'm surprised your mother didn't tell you stories of us," with the whole Nesta, the nails, maybe being a witch. Because, where is my note? There was one specific part that, again, I don't think it's like a solidifying thing. It's just something that I can add to the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Is, for whatever reason, I feel like Jezebel kind of gives me Mama Archeron vibes. Because,
like, she is Mama Archeron, or she's like related?
Either is or related, because she has the same color eyes as Nesta. They all have like brownish golden hair, and Jezebel, from the art that I looked at, has like more golden, but like as you get older, your hair can lighten.
Yeah.
And Nesta is specifically depicted as like the closest one looking like her mother. Mm-hmm. And so if you would like to follow the witch theories, Jezebel could easily be Mama Archeron, and even though it says like that she died in Archeron, what if she didn't? And also, what if like she faked her death in one way? She is a part of either the Crotians or the Blackbeaks, and like she's a descendant of that, and that's where she would get the iron teeth and nails that she could easily have passed on to Nesta. And, oh gosh, there's another piece of the puzzle. I want to say it had something to either do with her tattoo. Because I know that there was a thing with the Arkizian amulet that I might have in my notes further down in the chapter, where it specifically references, like, the shape of it and how it is, like, a loose translation to the three-faced goddess. Who is like the person that the witches look up to. So just a little.
I think I could jump on the train that she is like a side descendant. Right. I don't know if I'm convinced that she is Mama Archeron. Am I convinced that Mama Archeron was just not a regular human? 100%. What are the freaking odds that all three of your daughters are somehow changed into Fae and they all like have these like secret underlying powers? There's no way, right? Like, that, something's up with Mama Archeron. I totally agree with that.
I also think I heard a theory that Jezebel, like in another, no, it was more, but I could also see maybe Jezebel like in another life, like the baby that Asterion was pregnant with that died. Like, what if the baby didn't die and it's either Mor or Jezebel?
Oh, interesting.
Because I know there's like a theory that Lydia is a descendant of Aelin.
So right.
Like, easily Jezebel could be a descendant of someone as well.
That's true. I also have heard the theory that like Mor is like a descendant of Maeve.
Ooh. I don't know if I – well, no, because that would make sense, because I've heard Rhysand and Maeve and their cousins. That would make sense. Ooh, because I am solely on the train that Mor is going to be a traitor. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I am on that train.
I think part of me says yes. Part of me says that's too in your face. It's too predictable, right? I think it's going to be Elaine.
Okay. I have a crazy idea for Elaine. Is she my favorite? No. But another person who is really big in Throne of Glass, who was not my favorite. She still isn't like my favorite, but she grew on me.
Caltaine. I knew you were gonna say Caltaine. Knew it.
So I'm like, because Caltaine had this dark power, and she eventually like became this pivotal, iconic, powerful character. Mm-hmm. And Elaine, with her powers of being a seer, she also has like this insane power potential. So I could easily see her like being the ACOTAR version of Caltaine, like having a powerful comeback.
I think she also has the power to be the super big villain. She's too nice. She's too kind.
I have read a few Gwenreal fanfics where Elaine is the villain, and I kind of vibe it.
I think she's going to, like, betray. I've also heard a theory, and I don't want to stick too much into, like, the ACOTAR stuff, because I do want to stick back to, like, the Crescent City stuff, but, like, I have heard theories that she makes a bargain with, oh my gosh. Shoot, what's his name? It's right there. He lives. He's the bad guy that we're essentially going to have to come back to.
I say Kyoshi. No, not Kyoshi. Yeah, like that's
Koshe. Koshe. Yeah. I think she's going to try to make a deal with him to be turned back into a human.
Ooh.
And she'll have to turn on the inner circle to do so. Because I think she does not want to be Fae. I don't think she wants to have these powers. I don't think she wants to be a part of it.
I could see that. Because in one of the Gwenreal fanfics I read, there was like a storyline to where she like made a bargain with Grayson. And he was mm-hmm. like, oh, I'll take you back if like you do this thing and you betray your friends and family.
Right. Is she that desperate though? I don't know. But Crescent's...
Oh, well.
Everything's fine.
The world was turning.
It was my camera turning, not me falling, to be clear. We can edit that out. So back to Crescent City. Here is my question. We know by the end that Micah was behind all of this, right? But were there red flags that we missed in these first impressions that told us all along that he did it? Because I feel like it tells us in the beginning that Micah was like this, not a good archangel, but like not the worst, right? Mm-hmm. Like he paid them and he like let them do things and he made bargains with them. But is there things that we missed that told us in the beginning, like, oh, this dude is for sure up to something?
There was one specific sentence that I read that's not like a big thing, but it's kind of alludes to that he did the thing. Is I want to say it might have been chapter 11, where he essentially says, like he wants Bryce roped in to help, or no, it's either 11 or 13, where he like specifically mentions like the whole murder case instead of like alluding it to like giving it the dignity of it being a murder case. Mm-hmm. He calls it like this Danica crap or something.
Oh, okay. So a lot like deflecting.
Yeah.
Or just interesting. Okay.
Like definitely for no reason.
Yeah.
Just like degrading the situation.
Mm-hmm. Like downplaying it. Yeah, for sure. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Part of me thinks that it paints him in too good of a light to be an archangel. And I think when you're reading it, it can go one of two, like it could have gone one of two ways. Like he could have been a good archangel, right? Like truly, like as good as an archangel could be, mm-hmm. right? Or it paints him in too good of a light that you're like, something is up. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I don't know. For our listeners, I ask you that question, right? Is there something in this book before we got to the like the finale of it that you were like, oh, damn, I know it's him, or he's doing mm-hmm. something, or he's a part of it. Like, was there a moment in the book that you guys saw that? Let us know.
Ooh, I did have one more note, because something clicked in my mind, and if you're watching the episode, you might have seen me staring off into space as the gears were turning in my head. But it's whenever you were talking about the levels of hell and how they assume that this demon that attacked everyone is coming from the pit. and you specifically said something about it not needing light, which it's like a stretch, but I'm still gonna ride with it. But I was like, you know who else is a scary thing that doesn't need light or lives in darkness?
Yes.
So I'm like, what if Bryaxis is a Crystallos? Because like, we don't know what he looks like, and Crystalloses are pretty scary. I'm pretty sure Crystallos would scare Cassian.
Yes, but we know that Bryaxis was not all evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, it like had, it was sentient, like it had thoughts, and it made a deal and like a bargain with Feyre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that the Crystallos is capable of doing?
I feel like it is a stretch, like the biggest stretch that you could ever have, because I want to say, I want to be cheesy and be like, not all Crystallos, because like also whenever you read Throne of Glass, like you have these, what's the word I'm looking for? Like these criteria and these like descriptions of how Wyvern are supposed to act and feel and how they're supposed to interact with their riders. But then you got cute little baby Abraxas who just wants to smell the flowers, who can like loosely communicate with Mino and
people. With who? And,
okay. I say Mino because listen, there was a girl in one of my classes in college, and her name was Mino, spelled the same way as Manon. But I didn't know how to say it. And so I think whenever I introduced myself or something, I said, I think I said Manon, because that's also how I read Manon's name the first time was Manon.
Yeah.
And she's like, actually, it's Mino. I'm like, okay, write that down. And I was supposed, like, the icebreaker was we were supposed to introduce our person that we were grouped with. And I just, like, completely forgot what she said. So I said Manon again. And she's like, actually, it's Mino. And then we had to go into a whole conversation of how I think she grew up in France and is of French pronunciation. So every time I see Manon, I'm just like, no, no, it's Mino, or you're going to get yelled about it. So if I say Mino or Ithan, I apologize. But even
we have the history now.
But even Manon was like, your wyvern doesn't communicate with you. Like, you're not able to like loosely understand them. And people are like, what? You're crazy. So maybe not all Crystallos, because I don't know if they have the ability to talk, or I don't think.
In the book, the Crystallos does not speak or like have thoughts that we know of. I like the I like the stretch idea that they're from the pit, maybe a different species, right? Because there's lots of that's down there. And it's interesting because the pit is a planet. Like Adis says that later on in the book, like that, like hell itself is a planet.
And that planet could be Valaris. Cough, cough, that other hint of Azriel potentially being Prince of Hell.
It
and
could
he
be.
Rolls the hit, the pit.
It could be, right? Or they could just be connected, right? Via, like, whatever portal or gate we have. So I think that's maybe a fair assumption. That's interesting.
Again,
I don't know.
It's a stretch, but it was something that popped in my head. I was like,
yeah.
Interesting. That could be potentially a thing.
Yeah,
I do
that's
think
fair.
Abraxas is definitely pit related.
Or, yeah, something from somewhere for sure. I love that. And that's all we have today. Those are our thoughts.
Wow.
That was the House of Theories and Lore for today. Next week, we'll have more. Thank you guys for listening to the Goodish Girls today. We hope you hang out with us next week as well. Keep on reading and or listening to Crescent City. And then hang out with us. Again, I'm Dallas.
And I'm Madison.
We'll see you later. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home. with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at spinquest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.